It is Friday, June 21st, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. Support for KUAF comes from EurekaSprings.org, a website featuring more than 80 bed and breakfasts, historic hotels, lodges, cottages, and cabins, plus information on dozens of restaurants. A Eureka Springs vacation planner, events calendar, and more are available on the web at EurekaSprings.org.
Ahead on Ozarks, we finish our series on the Arkansas Research and Technology Park, and Christina Thomas goes to the farm to find out more about a project connecting U.S. vets to agriculture.
And Becca Martin Brown will give us a guide to a low-cost weekend of entertainment, and Michael Tilley will talk to Kyle about the latest economic numbers for Arkansas and a very odd form of tourism developing to our immediate west.
All of that, plus music from inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio from 1 Ounce Jig. First, the Bentonville School District is making adjustments after four of its schools were placed on probation earlier this week by the State Department of Education. The probation was a result of some classes at Bentonville High, Old High Middle School, Ruth Barker Middle School, and Brightfield Middle School having one or two more students enrolled in the classes than the state mandated maximum of 28. Mary Lay is the district's director of communications.
We just have made sure that our schedules next year are tight and that we've all talked to the principals, and the curriculum executive director's been on it and is making sure that she has situation, that there are people that are making sure that that doesn't happen again. So we thought you were actually allowed to do that, so it's just a mistake we made. Our students had great instruction, and we feel that there wasn't any harm, but we do respect the law and want to be a good example of the law, so we sure won't let it happen again.
She says with the rapid enrollment growth of the school district, balancing student schedules with the amount of teachers available can be difficult.
Let's say a student comes in October and they have 28 students in a middle school classroom and it's just one more student. What we're finding out is then we will have to hire another teacher and break up that classroom to accommodate one or two students. So we were trying to be fiscally responsible, and it's also harder to find good teachers, the best of the best, in the middle of the year. We pride ourselves on hiring the best of the best, and so we always like to hire right away when new teachers are ready to go in the spring. And so when you have to hire in the middle of the year and a new student transfers, it's just more difficult because great teachers are already in the classroom.
In related news, the Benton County Election Commission at its meeting last night put off a decision about using some school facilities as polling places for the upcoming millage election that will take place in September.
Unemployment has risen over the past month in Arkansas. The unemployment rate for May is 7.3%, representing about 97,000 people unemployed and actively looking for work in the state. In addition, the rate for April has been revised upward to 7.2%. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported this morning that 1,189,100 people were employed in the state during the month of May, but that's a decrease of almost 6,000 people from the month of April. In sheer terms of statistical significance, Arkansas's unemployment growth ranked among the top for the month, second only to South Carolina.
Construction of the 71B flyover North Fayetteville will cause a temporary lane shift on College Avenue. The change, which will affect northbound vehicles, will take effect Monday and last through the end of August. The 2013 Arkansas State Highway map is available, according to a release issued by the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department. The map this year includes 30 changes to the statewide map, nearly 50 changes to the insets of major metropolitan areas in the state, and on the cover, a picture of Highway 309 in Mount Magazine. The maps may be picked up at all Arkansas Welcome Centers and at any Highway Department district headquarters.
A judge has sentenced a former East Arkansas legislator convicted of election fraud to 3 years of probation, including 9 months of home confinement. Democrat Hudson Hallam pleaded guilty in September to bribing voters and using absentee ballots to commit fraud in the 2011 election for his seat. He resigned days after pleading guilty. Hallam apologized during his sentencing hearing. He says he violated the trust of his constituents and was ready to accept the consequences. Art English, a professor of political science at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, says a case like this leads to distrust in the system, but it's important to put it in context.
To my knowledge, that was a relatively deviant situation. We don't usually find legislators, attempting to bribe election officials and involve themselves in that kind of situation. But because it has involved a legislator, and because it's such a blatant type of attempt to influence a local election, it's become really big news, and it's, as a matter of fact, it probably has helped, you know, the passage of the voter ID law.
On top of his probation, Hallam was fined $20,000 in order to perform 100 hours of community service.
A year has made a remarkable difference in the drought situation in Arkansas. According to information from the National Drought Mitigation Center, just under 5% of the state is abnormally dry and only 1% of the state under moderate drought conditions. Dry conditions are limited to the southwestern part of the state. At this time last year, 98% of the state was considered abnormally dry and 84% was under moderate drought conditions. Less than 1% of the state was under a severe drought at this time last year.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals are on the road this weekend after opening a four-game series last night in Tulsa. The Nats beat the Drillers 4-3. The series continues tonight in Tulsa.
And it will be partly cloudy tonight. Lows from 70 to 74 throughout the region. It's summer, so mostly sunny. Highs from 88 to 92 tomorrow. Saturday night, mostly clear. Lows in the lower 70s. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kelms. With me on the phone is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, economics, tourism, and much more for the entire KUAF listening area. How are you, sir?
I am well this morning. How is it there in Fayetteville?
It's, you know, not too bad. It's summer, so it's what you would expect, I suppose.
Yep.
The Compass Report, which, of course, the City Wire produces throughout the year, has the latest edition is out. It shows the economy slowing in the greater Fort Smith area, and it shows some positive things for the Northwest Arkansas economy.
Yeah, it's not a surprise, although it is a little disappointing. If we talk about the Fort Smith area, the economy began to pick up and was showing signs that it had reached the bottom and was moving up. Even if it was slight moves up, it was at least a move in the right direction. But this first quarter of 2013, it slipped in relation to where it was in the first quarter of 2012. And a lot of that still, Kyle, is just the labor force. I mean, we're seeing a smaller labor force. The unemployment rate was somewhat higher. It's just that persistent labor problem. I think we're up to 51, maybe 52 months of an unemployment rate at or above 7%. In many of those months, it's been at or above 8%. So that's just been tough. And we're seeing some sales tax collections flat or decline as a result of that labor issue. But on the other side of that coin, you have Northwest Arkansas, and it's still just gaining momentum. Housing numbers are up. Sales tax collections are up. The labor force numbers are definitely up there. So it's almost exact opposite image of what's going on in the Fort Smith area. And as our Compass reports, we also measure Central Arkansas economy. So we're looking at the top three metro areas in the state. And the Central Arkansas economy slipped also a little bit in the first quarter of 2013 compared to 2012. So as our economist Jeff Collins noted, it's a little bit of a little disconcerting for two of the three largest metro areas to have slipped a little bit.
The unemployment rate in Northwest Arkansas for that first quarter of 2013, 5.5%. That's the lowest in the state of all the...
Well, right, and I think it's one of the lowest of the 370 or 360-something metro areas. I think it's one of the top 75 in terms of the lowest. So it's nation. It's not just booming metro area in Arkansas. It's one of the hottest metro areas in the country. Of course, you have some little companies some folks have heard of, like Walmart and Tyson and J.B. Hunt, and the University of Arkansas help keep that employment going.
The saga of the remnants of Whirlpool continues in Fort Smith. Of course, what was left behind and what that does to the people who live near there. And this week, in the City Wire, there were questions about the people, some of the efforts to help the people who might be hurt by what was left behind.
Right. It's been an interesting dilemma. Of course, there's this nasty chemical called PCE, and apparently it's leaked out over years from Whirlpool's manufacturing plant there in Fort Smith, and it's affected a lot of residents, affected a lot of homes that are around the plant. Well, back in March, Erin Brockovich and her consulting firm, environmental consulting firm, came to Fort Smith and essentially said, "We're going to investigate this. We're not going to let Whirlpool get away with this. We've got your back." Well, they were going to set up a Facebook page. They were going to do several other things. And They just never did. And we, the CityWire, tried frequently to place more than 50 phone calls to their consultant, try to get in touch with her and the consulting firm, and nobody would return calls. Then we started having some of the residents call us, say, hey, we can't get the Aaron Brockridge's consulting firm to call us back. And, you know, we don't know what's going on. And, in fact, a couple of the residents ended up joining a civil lawsuit against Whirlpool because they got tired of waiting on Brockovich. But anyway, we posted a story essentially saying, you know, where's Aaron? The next morning after we posted the story, she called bright and early, and she was a little upset with us. But once we lined out what we had done to try to get in touch with her, she calmed down somewhat. At the end of the call, it was very conciliatory, and she's promised that she's not going to abandon Fort Smith. She's going to do everything she can to get to the bottom of this and help these people because, unfortunately, the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality has not been, what's the right word? Let's just say they've not been as proactive on behalf of the community and the citizens as one might expect.
Finally, there was an interesting article in the CityWire.com this week about storm chasing, chasing after tornadoes. Not the professionals who do it for documentaries or for the Weather Channel, but there's actually tourism based on chasing after a tornado?
Yeah, that's I just find that nuts, frankly. I mean, I guess everybody has their thing. I mean, you got this guy walking across the Grand Canyon. That's crazy, too. But, yes, it's a tourism business, and it's drawing some heat. You know, we had some of the professional storm chasers tragically die from some of the recent tornadoes in Oklahoma. And so it's raised questions as to how safe is this? And, you know, the storm, obviously these tour companies say, look, we haven't killed anybody. We know how to stay away. We don't go after the big tornadoes. But hey, you've got, we talked to some of the weather folks, Drew Michaels at 4029, just to, you know, what is, you know, would you recommend this? What do you think about this industry? But yeah, Ryan Saylor, our reporter, he pulled that together as his idea. Kudos to him. But that's something I'm not going to spend money on to see how close I can get to, you know, something that throws cars around like they were, you know, toys.
Well, one of the guys Ryan talked to who runs this storm-chasing tourism outfit says he's gotten a group of tourists within 150 yards of a small, slow-moving tornado in Colorado. That doesn't sound safe to me.
Well, I mean, first of all, is there such a thing as a slow-moving tornado?
Well, yes, exactly.
So, you know, even an F1 or F2, whatever, those things are dangerous. So, and 150 yards, you know, that's just a little over a football field. I mean, that's the kind of number we hope the Razorbacks put up at least in one half of offense next year, but that's not anywhere near a tornado. I'd want to be.
Well, it's an interesting article that's on the front page right now. Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of the City Wire that covers business, politics, arts, and weird tourism. For the entire KUAF listening area, Michael, thank you very much.
All right, welcome back to the States, too, Kyle.
Thank you.
Music critic Lawrence Gilman once said of Anton Bruckner, "For a few, he was and is at rare intervals a seer and a prophet, one who knew the secret of a strangely exalted discourse." Hi, I'm Katie Hendrickson, host of the KUAF Sunday Symphony, Sunday nights from 7 to 9 on KUAF. Join me for Bruckner's Symphony No. 4 from the Los Angeles Philharmonic, led by Esa-Pekka Salonen. That's coming up Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m., right here on KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large. When many veterans complete their tours of duty and return to the United States, they find it difficult to find a job. Many employers don't honor their military or may not trust their fragile minds. Arm to Farm aims to arm veterans with knowledge and with a pitchfork in an effort to help them recover from life at war, but also to provide them with employment opportunities. This week, over 30 veterans from around the United States and the region gathered in Northwest Arkansas to learn about small farming. The vets met with local small farmers and got hands-on experience as well as spent time in the classroom. We reported on the first Arm to Farm in 2011, and Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas decided to visit the program again while the group was on a farm visit.
Terrell Spencer, known as Spence by most, first got chickens in 2007. An Iraqi veteran, he was unable to find the help he needed after his tours at the local Veterans Administration and decided to seek out his own therapy. He found solace in farming.
Farming was like the vessel for me to work out my issues. And I say it was the pot and my faith is what filled it. But it was kind of the cup that got that medicine to me, if you will.
Not only therapeutic, farming has become his livelihood. Spence's family farm, Across the Creek Farm, has grown much since then. What began at his home in West Fork has expanded to 20 acres just south of Fayetteville, which is where I spoke with him. From 350 meat chickens sold just a few years ago to a projected 10,000 chickens this year. He supplies Ozark Natural Foods in Fayetteville, in addition to restaurants and private customers. Across the Creek Farm primarily sells pasture-raised meat chickens, which Spence feeds GMO-free feed, of which he has recently become the area's only distributor. He does not take this success, though humble Spence might not call it success, for granted. Spence gives back in a major way. He helps other veterans to find the same opportunities that he did.
I feel like I was given a second chance. It's something I struggled with, and I was kind of felt like I was thrown out on the dumpster by the VA. I understand they deal with a lot of folks and all that, but my life is precious to me and my family. Just seeing the value in these guys, and I it's very rewarding for me. And I feel like it's something that I've been called to do.
In addition to programs like Arm to Farm, Spence hosts veteran interns. He pitched the idea for Arm to Farm to members of the agricultural community, in particular, Annie Donahue. She's with the USDA Ag Research Center at the University of Arkansas and the Dale Bumpers Small Farm Research Center in Boonville, the nation's only center that's focused on small farm research. They recently received a $750,000 grant through the USDA for beginning farmers and ranchers, and this Arm to Farm event is part of that. Here's Annie Donahue.
Yeah, this is actually a really cool bringing together of a lot of different expertise. And it's fun because it's sort of working the way military teams do, too. So we have NCAT, we have the University of Arkansas Division of Ag, we have a big input with the USDA ARS group, and then we have the farmers. So we have several farmers and Farmer Veteran Coalition. So there's a bunch of us, and actually Arkansas Women in Ag are also involved. So a very big group that have come together.
They've been working with veterans for about 5 years. And were really one of the first groups to do so. Due to the tremendous need, Arm to Farm received over 300 applicants this year, from which they could choose only 30. The interest Donahue attributes to the many Americans with a military background.
They've been called to a life of service. And this is something they see not only that is service back to their communities, but also a therapeutic thing for them. A lot of the guys and gals that have come back, they have some incredible stories. We started the first day with just introductions. I'll tell you, I was in tears. It's incredible the sacrifices that these people and their families have made for our country. And they are really wanting to do something with their lives at this point. So it's really, and they're very entrepreneurial in their own way, but they have some needs on the entrepreneurial side that we're helping with research and with some extension work that will help them to do that.
Self-proclaimed ranger wife Jana Helton echoes that sentiment.
I believe that military service, the commitment that you have to give to the military, the dedication, the hard work, and there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that goes into being in the military, and there's a pride to it, and it's the exact same thing whenever you're looking at owning land and letting the land work for you. You have to have commitment, you have to be dedicated, and it will be hard work, but it is so rewarding. They're almost parallel objectives. They really are.
She and her veteran ranger husband recently purchased land near Benton, Arkansas, though they have yet to begin farming. They know nothing about it, and that's why they're here in Northwest Arkansas, to learn as much as they can so they can choose what will be right for their farm, whether it be chickens, hogs, goats, or livestock. Mike Becker spent 16 years in the armed forces. He and his wife have been working on a small chicken and goat farm on the hilly coast of Oregon for 3 years.
When I came back, obviously you're dealing with the basic city problems that a lot of vets have, which is they don't get along with a lot of people. You know, we both love the coast, and the Oregon coast is our thing. So we both said, let's just find a place. She's a pharmacist, so she found a job real easy on the coast. And so we moved there, and then that's what we started doing. Just, you know, I'm out there bebopping around. Unfortunately, veterans don't get hired very quickly. for jobs, unfortunately, because we're apparently our training doesn't apply to the civilian world. So I was unemployed, saying, well, I'll just fix this place up. Captured some goats, did all kinds of fun stuff, and now we're a little operation going on there.
Becker is also a master gardener, little town's only postman. The original location of Across the Creek Farm's pasture chickens was in a hilly holler in West Fork. Becker hopes to learn from Spence, as he also has hilly land in Oregon.
You know, that's the good thing about coming here, is you find out what's everybody's weak links and when are they seasons and this and that. Well, you know, my niche is going to be a little bit different. I can push it out further. I can do it year-round. I could, you know, like we have a large Latin community where I'm at, and they love goat meat. So that, you know, that whole meat goat thing is a great adventure as well. And so I'm working on that, you know, trying to time it because it's seasonal. And that's kind of what we're doing. It's a small thing, but I come to these because you're never going to know everything. You want to learn it.
And Spence is here to teach them. On the morning of the visit to his farm, the eager veterans gathered in a semicircle around him as he explained the ins and outs of his chicken farm, things he's primarily had to learn on his own. Everything from hatchlings to appropriate weights, processing, how to water and feed them, what he feeds them, how to care for certain diseases, and so on. On these 20 acres, he has about 20 coops. Pasture raised doesn't mean they roam free. It means raised on the pasture. And the chickens need protection from predators. So Spence has constructed these coops from wood, chicken wire, PVC pipes, and covered them with recycled billboard sheets. Yes, billboards, which makes for a colorful pasture. And he'll teach the vets how to make their own coops as well. These coops, however, have no floor. The pasture is their floor. And Spence moves these coops every day so his chickens have fresh grass. And today, the veterans get hands-on experience by helping Spence move his coops. They place a dolly under one side and arrange a rope around their bodies from the other, dragging the coop the 10 or so feet to get the chickens on their fresh grass.
Come on, guys. So at this point, they're pretty well trained. So some of them will race up to grab the bulbs. They're kind of taking their time. As the day goes on, they're like us. They don't want to be moving around, so we try to get this done by 8. But you can see them. There's that one back there. They're attacking some of the grass. And they're kind of like, see them in the back there? Everybody's different. Some of them like seeds. Some of them like hunting for bugs.
Well, Spence loves his chickens like they love the fresh grass. And he loves his work with veterans, teaching them what he had to learn on his own. In addition to Arm to Farm and hosting interns, Spence also speaks at various events and conferences. As the veterans piled into vans preparing to pull out and take them to their next stop on their farm tour, I too tried to get in my car. Spence, however, wouldn't let me leave without telling me what drives him.
So Issachar is a strong donkey. When he saw the beauty of the land, he willingly bent his shoulder to the burden. And that's what drives me, because when I see these couples out here, and I know some of their history, and I know what they're struggling with, and I know what should have happened to me, I should have ended up like my buddies. It's like, how can you not drive forward and pursue when you see the beauty of the land? You know, the fields are white for harvest, but the workers are few. So I don't really care what other people are doing. Even if it's just like me working out with one guy and I pay him what I can pay him, you know,
making a difference for that one guy.
Yeah. I'm not concerned about changing the world. I'm just concerned about helping a family. So, But anyways, and that's kind of what drives us. Yeah. So I want to be in Issachar.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
It is Friday, June 21st, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Anthony Grajeda.
With us is Becca Martin Brown. She is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Who are you again?
Yeah, that's. I'm getting a lot of that lately. I wasn't gone that long.
I remember you vaguely.
Have you ever been gone 2 weeks before?
No, he hasn't. I swear to you.
So it was good. I feel great. I feel refreshed.
This is a good thing.
Yes, it is.
And Antoinette's beginning to look less stressed.
I didn't look that stressed.
A little bit.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'm stressed because it's the Friday between paydays.
So you got to find some inexpensive stuff to do.
Well, and I'm trying to squirrel away money to go to New Orleans. So today's theme is not inexpensive. It's free.
Excellent.
That's my favorite kind of inexpensive.
And you know, you'd be amazed at the variety of events that price tag will buy you in Northwest Arkansas.
Hit me.
Well, the first one is SkySpace.
Mm-hmm.
James Terrell's SkySpace work, The Way of Color, which has actually been at Crystal Bridges longer than Crystal Bridges.
Right.
Is generally seen at sunset. But for the summer solstice, they're having a sunrise viewing tomorrow at 5:30 in the morning.
Well, if you're going to do sunrise.
Y'all let me know how it turns out. They say limited to about 35 guests because of space restrictions, after which they'll have a yoga session, then music in the afternoon and evening, and they'll have Craig Colarusso's sky boxes on the art trail.
Sunboxes.
Sunboxes. Yeah. Sometimes English is not my first language. And it will all wrap up with stargazing at 9:30 that evening.
A full day, and it's all
free.
That's great.
Then there's Spring Fest.
Yes.
It's not spring anymore.
It's not. It's summer.
But then again, when it was supposed to be spring on May 4th, they were expecting snow.
Well, yep. They got it, too.
So We're going to try this again in the summer. This happens Saturday. The bed races are at 1 o'clock. Yes, it's people in beds.
Okay, good. I wanted to know what time it was because the last Spring Fest I went to a couple of years ago, I missed it.
I don't think they had it a couple of years ago.
Really?
I think it's back.
Okay.
There's a pet parade at 11, Children's areas and two stages of live music and about 2 dozen vendors on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. There's also a 5K run that leaves from Jose's at 7:30 in the morning, slightly less outrageous. Registration for that is open now at Jose's. And everything except what you eat is
free.
Exactly. Western Days is this weekend. It's Rodeo of the Ozarks time. I think this is number 69?
Something like that. Yeah.
Something. 68, 69 sounds right.
I think it's number 69. And this is the introduction. If you don't know anything about rodeo, you can show up at 9 o'clock tomorrow at the Rodeo Community Center in Springdale, where they're having a Western Trade Day.
So you bring...
They say this is not a flea market. It's Western attire and other Western things that you can buy, sell, or trade.
Fun.
Kids' activities start at 2. There's food at 5:30, which does cost $5, and live music featuring Jason Strode at 5:30 also.
And that the music is?
Free.
Wow.
Now, this one's iffy. It's the book sale hosted by Friends of the Library at the Fayetteville Public Library.
It's up to you.
Going to it is free from 9 to noon tomorrow. If you get out of it for free, you're not one of us.
But you can get out of it not spending a lot of money and getting books.
They're really inexpensive. They're like quarter or 50 cents, right?
Yeah, I think it's a quarter or 50 cents. So for $5, you could have the rest of the summer entertainment.
Sure.
And while you're there, you can hang around and go to see Shaky Bugs at 10:30 with Jules Taylor.
Always fun.
Doesn't matter if you're a kid. If you're a kid at heart, you'll love it. There's a dragonfly program with Robert Thomas at 2 tomorrow at Hobbs State Park near Rogers. And tomorrow night is the 4320 Film Challenge.
Oh, that's right.
And that number represents minutes.
Exactly. Films made in 72 hours, which is 4,320 minutes. You get your topic as you go out the door. 72 hours later, you show up with a film. Should be a lot of fun. Happens at 5 o'clock tomorrow at the Bentonville Public Library. And you might still make it to the 7:30 concert in Orchards Park. Featuring
Kenny Loggins
for free.
Yeah.
Part of the LPGA championship.
Right.
How's that for a free weekend?
You know what? A couple of cheap meals, buy a couple of books at the Fayetteville Public Library. You've got the full weekend for $10 and a lot of music and a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. How can you miss?
You can't.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Send donations to me.
The Arkansas Research and Technology Park has facilities serving as launch pads for new technology startups, as well as facilities for companies wanting to turn their research into business. It takes more, though, than just a building to bring a product to market. In the conclusion of our three-part series on the Research and Technology Park, Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis takes a look at some of the resources available to startups, as well as the development of the entrepreneurial environment in Northwest Arkansas.
For startup companies, the road to capitalizing on research and development of a product can contain obstacles like slow cash flow, or a prototype of a product could require further development before it makes it to market. In the Arkansas Research and Technology Park, companies start their R&D efforts in the Genesis Technology Incubator, and typically when they're ready for commercialization, the companies usually end up in the Enterprise Center. But for some companies, there's another step in between the two buildings. The Innovation Center is home to the University of Arkansas Technology Development Foundation, the nonprofit governing body that manages operations and development of the park. Phil Stafford is the executive director of the foundation.
Once a company has graduated from the incubator, they need to continue to elaborate on the technology that is under development so that they can optimize the designs.
Before Arkansas Power Electronics International expanded with a manufacturing line at the Enterprise Center, the company moved into the second floor of the Innovation Center, where they still have clean rooms for further refining products on which the company plans to commercialize. Having an R&D facility in a park such as the ARTP, Stafford says, is a more appealing option for young startups so that fiscal resources aren't stretched thin.
It's more efficient for early emerging technology companies to lease that space as opposed to be taking their precious capital and plowing it into building a facility. They're able to focus entirely on the development of their technologies subject to a lease agreement with the foundation.
And preserving capital is key to maintaining a startup. No stranger to creating or managing startup ventures, Calvin Goforth says that staying in the black is crucial to a startup's survival.
Typically they fail when they run out of money, but you have to back up from there a little bit and say, well, why did they run out of money? Was it because they didn't plan things properly? Was it because they didn't have a realistic understanding of what it would take to bring the product to market? It's hard to identify much more specifically than that. There's just so many different reasons a company might fail.
Goforth is the CEO of Vic Technology Venture Development, a firm based in the Innovation Center that forms new technology companies around a piece of licensed intellectual property. Three of the four companies that I talked to, Blue and Green, Nanowatt Design, and SFC Fluidics, were in fact formed by Vic. Before a company can be formed, though, the intellectual property of a technology is found, either through relationships with other research universities, research magazines, online databases of patents available for license, or through the U of A itself.
We find something through the screening process that we think is worthy of attention, then we have a very systematic process comprising a review of the intellectual property, patentability, freedom to operate, primary market research, looking for the right partners that we go through to narrow down and identify, hey, this is a technology, the initial technology foundation for a new company that we're going to create with partners.
And Goforth also says that Vic has had substantial growth in its portfolio, which currently includes 12 tech companies. The formula has been so successful in Northwest Arkansas that the company has opened a branch office in Boston, but not every company that Vic has formed has been successful. He says that one such company was shut down after a company with a competing technology released a product to market that had better specs than the Vic-funded startup was achieving even in its lab tests.
All of our companies are risky. I mean, we accept that. What we do is a risky business. But if the reward is large in return, it can be a very exciting business opportunity as well. And so when we're looking at a technology and a business opportunity, we gauge the risk versus reward ratio. And as long as the reward is high enough, we'll take a very risky technology, understanding that it may not be successful. We can't predict the future with certainty, but we've done a pretty good job and had very very low failure rate so far.
While Vic starts companies with patents licensed from a variety of resources, it does end up with a lot of companies developing products based in research from the University of Arkansas. Until late 2012, that intellectual property was licensed through the University of Arkansas Technology Licensing Office. But in November, the office reorganized, spinning off the patent portfolio of the UA System Division of Agriculture from the portfolio formed from research done at the rest of the main campus in Fayetteville. Both entities have offices in the Innovation Center at the ARTP. UA Technology Ventures manages the Fayetteville campus's portfolio, and Jeff Amerine is the Director of Technology Licensing.
Many of the affiliates that are here are University of Arkansas intellectual property licensees. So companies like SFC Fluidics, companies like Nanomech, companies like APEI, you know, all at one time or another were licensees. Companies like Vic Technology Venture Development that does commercial incubation are licensees of the university. So our job is to be a good industrial liaison for those companies so that they can be competitive in the marketplace, and also so that the university can get a fair return, both in terms of royalties and patent reimbursement, and in terms of potential virtual equity holdings in the companies.
Amerine says that there's probably about $125 million worth of federally backed research being conducted at the U of A, and that aside from getting a return on investment for that research, bringing the university's intellectual property to the marketplace brings other benefits as well.
It does advance the state of knowledge across the wide spectrum of things, from nanotechnologies to pharma to electrical engineering to software to everything that you can imagine across the research enterprise. What you'd like to be able to do is figure out how to use some of that as a kernel for great business that can then provide high wage rate employment for graduates from the university. The last thing we really want to do is have the University of Arkansas be sort of a farm club for Texas or California or the East Coast.
That idea is something that echoed throughout the interviews conducted for this series. Sharmella Mounts, the Director of Business Operations for Arkansas Power Electronics International, says that when APEI still had three employees, there were serious doubts about the long-term viability of her, Alex Lotstetter, and Jared Hornberger being able to stay in Northwest Arkansas and keep a career in the technology development field.
Alex, Jared, and myself, when we were kind of getting towards the end of before we got our first project, you know, we started to say it might not work. You know, we really love the area. We love Northwest Arkansas. We wanted to stay in this area, but there's not a lot of technology based firms in Northwest Arkansas, and so that's why we had that passion to try to develop something here. And in actuality, we were about a week away from losing Alex to another company because, you know, we do have to work and survive and feed our families for sure.
She says that right before Lotstetter joined another firm, the company received its first Small Business Innovation Research Grant, a federal grant program that funds high-risk technologies that have potentially high payoffs in the long run. And looking in the longer run, Amerine says that development of the park and the R&D environment at the U of A has really changed the entrepreneurial climate, even in the past 5 years, stating that part of the transformation came about as a result of the financial downturn of the latter half of the last decade.
So those things all coming together in the 2006, 2007, 2008 timeframe put angel investors, early stage investors, in a frame of mind that investing in early stage local management teams might be better than trying to make money in real estate, and it might still be better than trying to put money in a volatile public market. So those things all kind of came together at the same time in a very supportive fashion. So some of it was timing, some of it was adversity, some of it was we had been patient over a 12-year process to see some of the seeds that had been planted with these various things begin to really take hold, and now they're taking hold.
Amerine noted that the success the area has seen in terms of entrepreneurial activity can be evidenced in articles such as the one written by Entrepreneurial Magazine, which listed Northwest Arkansas as one of 9 U.S. cities that you wouldn't think of as hubs for tech startups. But does that mean this quarter of the state will be the next Silicon Valley?
No, and nobody around here is going to call this Silicon anything, but we could very well be a worldwide center of excellence for all things retail, CPG, supply chain, food processing, and the associated technologies that support them, in addition to the beginnings of things like nanomaterials and power electronics and sustainable product development. So the future is bright. We've got this really interesting unfair competitive advantage in the large companies that have been built. Now it's time to have this sort of renaissance of where we reinvent what comes next. The university is right in the center of all that in every respect.
With technology, innovation, marketization, and jobs forming in the area, it seems interesting that the site of much of this development at the ARTP was, decades ago, home to a more traditional type of manufacturing operation. Before the land was acquired by the University of Arkansas and before the Engineering Research Center or Genesis Incubator were located there, the land was home to a manufacturing plant for the now-defunct Bear Brands Hosiery Company. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
Couple of quick notes for today. The Alabama Shakes have been added to the AMP 2013 season.
Exciting news.
Very exciting. The show is September 6th at 7:30. Gates open at 6. Tickets will go on sale Friday, June 28th. That's next Friday at 9 a.m. And ticket prices start at $38.50.
All right. The Suits, a band, will be together for tonight and then one more time next month. We'll be at the Phoenix, that's formerly Rogue, on Dixon Street. This is part of Jamie McGaugh's new script called B-Side Myself. Mm-hmm. The script itself includes music that he's written. This is a one-time band formed, but they're playing as the band tonight at the Phoenix.
Excellent. And two big shows later this weekend as well. Tomorrow, Pokey LaFarge and Three Penny Acre will be at George's. And then on Sunday, Old Crow Medicine Show and Three Penny Acre will be at the Arkansas Music Pavilion.
Sunday afternoon at the Fayetteville Public Library, 1 Ounce Jig will be there to close out the June music series at the library.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Packard on bass, Jeff Kearney guitar and vocals, Jeff Gray trumpet, Marty Payton drums, Matthew Beach trombone. This is the latest incarnation of an ever-evolving band. We had them in the Furman Garner Performance Studio yesterday. I asked Jeff Kearney if he's written any songs specifically for this version of the band.
Yeah, there have been a couple of songs that I've written.
You said you wrote Rampage with me and mine on the drums.
Yeah, definitely.
So you've written a song, and then you come to these guys, and you've got trombone, and you've got percussion, and you've got bass, and you've got trumpet, and you've got whatever. What happens then after you've written it? Do you just kind of throw it out there and...
I just start playing it, and then Marty starts playing drums, Drew starts playing bass, and you have a little horn huddle going on in the corner, and they figure out something to play, you know. It's pretty, like, organic, natural process.
Ideas do get thrown about, tossed about amongst each other, though. If you're playing a part and you feel like you hear something in the horn section, you know, hey, will you guys try this? Because I want to hear how it sounds. And, you know... They may play it and it sounds fantastic, or it may flop, you know, or somebody else may not like it. It may stick, it may not, and that's how it comes
together.
There
have actually been times where I haven't showed the band a song at all, and the first time I showed it to them was in a live performance setting. So,
What? I mean, with them on stage with you?
Trial by fire, man.
Exactly.
And now, how does that work? Do you have this look in your eye and you say, guys, here's something you've never heard?
Right. You just follow me, boys.
That's usually what it is. He says that far too often.
Yeah. They can. I mean, I totally trust their abilities to lay down what needs to be laid down, you know?
It's really nice the way Jeff does things, because he writes these songs, and then for horn players, it's really awesome, because we just come in, and it's like there's pseudo parts, or we come up with parts, but the best part is we just get to... It's a lot of improv in the horn
room
section.
To move.
Yeah,
room to breathe.
Lots of songs. It's just improv solos, and that's the best for horn players. That's why I like playing this band the most.
And how do you know if there's improv? How do you know when that solo might be done, or it might be time?
It's a very complex series of hand signals and eye contact.
Yeah, or like if we're dying of breath. I've had those moments where it's like, please stop. Like, I played
too
long.
Right. There's a musical momentum, too. As you begin to improvise, you begin to make statements and have a progression of energy. The whole band walks with you. You'll pick up the energy. The drummer will follow you. And every once in a while, in some solos, we actually have a shout section towards the end of a solo where the whole band will change chords and move with it. And when you're done with the statement, everybody's listening to you while you play, and you can kind of tell that you're coming to the ending point. And at that point, everything comes to a head, and you hit it real hard and snap back into Jeff singing, usually.
Yeah. We like to try to keep the music alive, you know, and not let it get stagnant and... you know, because we play a lot, if we had to play it the exact same way every time. And, you know, there's some instances where we do that, but you need, like, a little bit of difference, you know.
Keep it interesting for yourself.
Yeah. The human element.
Right.
Because we're not just doing this for you. We're doing this for us, too.
Right.
we like the music that we play. I like the music that we play,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's, you know, if you can stretch it out a little bit. Stretch it out a little
you
bit.
Bet.
Give people their money's worth.
We're just trying to offer a good time.
I want to ask the horn guys, because you both have brought in mutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a whole nother thing you can do with the instrument, right? I mean, how much does that change? How much does it expand what sounds you can make with your instruments?
Oh, man. It's a whole nother level. I don't know. When I picked up the plunger, and it's called a Pixie Mute. I picked it up because I wasn't very good. Not very good, but I couldn't play a lot of these technical things or these high notes. But I could do the plunger really well. And my teacher, Gerald Sloan, if he's listening. Anyway, he was super into plunger, and he got me really into playing on the plunger. And that's one of my favorite things to do. And this band lets me do that. All the other groups I play in, you can't really do any plunger stuff. So.
Yeah, he's into, like, plungers and, like,
teacups. I love
teacups.
It, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's way cool. It's
anything,
way cool.
Like,
it's
yeah.
Yeah. Like, put a good bucket,
player.
A teacup into the...
Yeah, well, there's this thing. You take the bell section off, mm-hmm. and you just play with the slide, and you put a teacup where the bell would have been. So it just makes a really small bell, but it's out of a cup. It makes a different sound. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, he's done that before. It's...
Wow.
I enjoy it, yeah.
And a lot of the funk that we play is bright and sharp, but then at the same time, we play some stuff that's a little dirty and a little New Orleans. When you do that, you can speak a lot more using a plunger or a mute. But the reason I brought my harmony mute in and put it in the horn today is because I play the loudest instrument on the planet. And to come in here with an acoustic bass and acoustic guitar, I mean, if I played open trumpet, I would dominate the sound that we make, you know, and I'd rather be a part of the group, not on top of the group, you know?
I have seen you guys in a club or outside Sunday at the library. Speaking of,
yes,
it's a Sunday. What, it starts at 2?
It's a Sunday. I think so. Yeah,
yeah, right. Sunday afternoon, 2, free. There's going to be a whole mix of people.
Yeah,
kind of a different sort of, at least, surrounding environment than usual, right?
Yeah,
that will
it's
be
a little
different.
Early for us.
Yeah, that is true. It's a little early.
And there's going to be kids?
Yeah. That cuts our set in half. Just kidding.
Have you? No, yes,
we
just
can
kidding.
Adjust them.
Have you had any conversation about that? I mean, an afternoon library? I think you're still going to be one ass jig.
We
right?
do that all the time, yeah. We played for a gathering called the Junebug Jam last weekend, where it's mostly children and parents hanging out, and we like to play family environments, you know. I think our music is fun and involves a lot of things that are, you know, regular day-to-day life things, like going fishing and, you know, changing your life, you know, saying I'm going to make a brand new day tomorrow. No matter what's going on with me today, I'm going to walk forward from here. So I think it's easy for us to be in that environment.
Yeah, that gig was for the Headwaters School, which they're doing great stuff out there. We played another gig in Joplin right after the tornado, and a kid came up to the stage while I was playing, and he was, like, watching me play guitar really intently, and I took my guitar off, and I was like, you know, have a go at it, buddy. Like, here's your chance, you know. And he played it for a second, and then I took it back. And then I turned around, and there were, like, a line of 10 kids all waiting to play. So it was an easy song. I gave them each, like, a couple of seconds and worked the pedals for them and stuff. And it was a good time.
Well, you guys, would you like to play a song?
No.
Yeah.
No? Okay. I always ask, and until now, no one's ever said no.
But. Yeah, we're just going to go.
Okay.
Absolutely.
See you later.
Yeah, let's do it.
But before we play, I'd like to tell everybody that we have a Kickstarter campaign going to get a new transmission in our van. And one of our CDs is offered as a reward on there. It's kind of the only place to get our CD right now, and except for the live show that we do. So,
So you go to it's an official Kickstarter?
Yeah, well, it'll be up in the next couple of days.
Okay. What's the level to get the CD?
I think it's like $25, and you get both of our CDs.
It's a deal.
Yeah.
What's the goal?
I think we're trying to get 2,000.
Okay, let's see. I'll get everyone set up here.
You're getting it.
What's that song?
This is called Pork and Beans, and it's about nearly starving to death. Here we go.
Potato flakes, but we can mix it up, and we can fix it up. We can beat it up, and we can beat it up. We cook it down till it's golden brown. Water it up, and we can drink it from a cup. Pockets, my condolence to the co-op, but there's no way to stop this hunger's motivation, and you just can't top it. Sometimes two things are better than one, in a tortilla or a hot dog bun. Add some ketchup just for fun, slurp it up and burp and then you're done. But we can mix it up and we can fix it up. We can eat it up and we can eat it up. We can cook it down till it's golden brown. Water it up and we can drink it from a cup.
Thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you.
That was fantastic.
Sure.
Library Sunday afternoon, Kickstarter very soon.
Yes.
That was 1 Ounce Jig in the Furman Garner Performance Studio yesterday. Drew Packer, Jeff Kearney, Jeff Gray, Marty Payton, Matthew Beach. Guys, thanks for coming in. Support for KUAF comes from Greenhouse Grill, featuring a seasonal menu of organic, locally grown produce and all-natural meats, plus organic beer and wines. Brunch and live music each Sunday until 2 p.m. 481 South School in Fayetteville's Mill District, on the web at greenhousegrill.com. Don't forget Mozart in the Museum from Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, Monday night at 8, a live radio broadcast featuring the Artisphere Festival Orchestra with Corrado Riveras, music director. Artisphearfestival.org for more information. Support for the broadcast comes from Cox Communications and Downtown Bentonville Incorporated.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Berryville.
Berryville in Carroll County. Thanks, Antoinette, to you and all my colleagues for letting me be gone the last couple of weeks.
You're welcome.
Have a good Friday.